from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in forums next hour this morning, this week hackers stole and published nude photos of celebrities, raising concerns about the security of online information and data stored in the cloud. We'll talk with the Defense Department's cybercrime expert, Tyler Cohen Wood, whose new book, Catching the Catfishers, explains just how to protect your online data and your reputation. And we'll also discuss with her the digital breadcrumbs that we unwittingly drop while surfing the web and how to guard against online predators and cyber stalkers. Next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's forum program. In this forum hour, we welcome author Tyler Cohen Wood, who is a social media and cyber issues expert and also senior officer and cyber branch chief for the Defense Intelligence Agency of the Department of Defense. She worked as a senior digital forensic analyst for the Department of Defense, as well as for IBM and NASA, and she's co-author of a book called Alternate Data Storage Forensics and recently published a book called Catching the Catfishers, Disarm the Online Pretenders, Predators, and Perpetrators Who Are Out to Ruin Your Life. And she joins us in studio for this morning's second forum hour. And welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Glad to have you here. And I thought we maybe would start off by talking about some news stories. One news story that we mentioned in the billboard was these nude photos which surfaced recently of a number of Hollywood celebrities. And I suppose the lesson in that is maybe if you're a Hollywood celebrity, you shouldn't put nude photos out there. But the fact of the matter is this is on the cloud. And this is now just pretty easy, accessible hacking.
Well, it is. And Apple released a press release, and they said after investigating it, it appears as if these were targeted attacks, and they were targeted password attacks. So the hacker basically tried to either, you know, guess the password based on information that they had gleaned from these people's social media, or they used a program that's just going to constantly keep trying to guess the password. And if it's an easy password, it's going to guess it pretty quickly.
And that brings up just the whole question of social media and what we want people to look out for and what they need to look out for, because you're just putting those digital breadcrumbs out there much more than you realize all the time.
Absolutely. And, you know, in my book, I really teach you how to think differently, because I think a lot of people think, well, this is online, I have privacy settings, no one can really see what I'm doing. But that's not necessarily true. These privacy settings change, and there are ways to get into people's accounts, like we've just seen with these celebrity hackings. But there are some things that you can do to protect yourself.
Tell us.
So a couple of things that I highly recommend that you do. First off, when you take a photograph with any modern day camera, there's something called EXIF data that's turned on by default. And this EXIF data contains
EXIF.
Yeah. EXIF, yes. And the average person, you can't see it. It just goes along with the photograph. And it contains information about the camera, including the exact location of where the photograph was taken. So some social media sites will strip it out, but if you're just saving this information in the cloud or using some type of storage, if you have that EXIF data turned on, then anyone, an 11-year-old, can use a freely available tool to pull out that EXIF data and actually put it into, you know, Google Earth and see a 3D image of where exactly that photograph was taken. So you may think, well, I'm taking this picture of the onesie that grandma sent, but you're taking it in the child's bedroom. Well, someone with ill intentions towards their child could actually use that against them and see exactly the location of that child's bedroom. So you have to start thinking a little bit more paranoid-like. But you can turn the EXIF data off in your phone.
You can actually, there's a setting on a smartphone.
Yes.
You can just turn off.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, on my website, I have a video blog where I teach you, tylercohenwood.com. I show you exactly how to do it on an Android and an iPhone device.
Also, reading in your book about just even something as innocent as hitting a like can create problems down the line, and in fact has created problems for some people.
It most certainly has. I was reading actually just yesterday about a case where some people, I apologize, I don't know the exact specifics, but there was a case where people are being potentially fired just because they liked something that someone posted. And the technology, obviously, the laws have to catch up to the technology, and it's an endless cycle where it's very, very hard to do. But people can tell a lot about you based on the things that you post and the things you don't post. I try very hard to manage my image online, and I will never speak about a political subject online. However, someone could probably pretty easily determine my political affiliations just based on the things that I have chosen to like that other people have posted.
I remember when I interviewed Eric Schmidt, I said to him, you can find out everything about anybody, mm-hmm. really, you Google folks, and he acknowledged that, but said, well, we're not trying to do that, though. But at the same time, social media has connection to the content that you put online, and there are all these potentials for invading your privacy and for doing all kinds of things. And
absolutely.
A lot of the advice that you give, a lot of the caveats that you give are really pretty logical and sensible. I mean, people
yes.
will post all the time on Facebook, well, here I am taking my selfie in Hawaii.
And right.
So their house is open and just invitation almost to burglars. These kinds of things, which just require a kind of street smarts or, as you say, maybe a little bit of paranoia.
Right. Well, and I think the issue is people think that they're protected by these privacy settings. They're posting things online. They don't really think anyone's paying attention. But that's not necessarily true. And sometimes I am actually surprised by the things that people say. I mean, you are just constantly, it seems as if every week, a sports person or someone is getting into trouble for something that they tweeted. You know, I read an article yesterday where a teacher, I think in California, posted on Twitter. She claimed she was joking, but she posted how she
Saw that. Yeah.
You saw that about how she can't wait to she's going to go to Starbucks and pour burning coffee on her kids and all kinds of things. And you just need to really think logically. You need to take your mindset and think, if I wouldn't say this to a room full of board members or my boss or a room full of people, don't say it online, because it's even worse, because it's forever.
That's also one of the more important points in your book, that you should behave like you do in the real world
yes.
when you're online. Fact of the matter is, most people, I shouldn't say most people, but you know, you have all these trolls and all these flaming people and everything who would never even think about doing this face-to-face. There's something about
never.
The online distinction mm-hmm. or the bifurcation between people online and the way they behave or comport themselves and the way we
absolutely.
Do. And I think this is just really valuable advice. Your real personality ought to be the one online instead of, kind of, in my mind, it's sort of like road rage. You know, you're in the car and you're alone.
Yes, you know. Exactly.
But let me go back to the cloud. A lot of people don't know what goes in it. It's more than we might realize. And what should our expectations of privacy be vis-a-vis the cloud?
Well, our expectations of privacy are changing. And because we're seeing that the more we rely on software and these digital devices for our daily lives and for our most private sensitive information, and this is corporations and companies too relying on this software, just statistically, the more bugs or vulnerabilities the software is going to have. And if you are a, you know, security professional trying to secure these devices or your system, you know, you're trying to find all the holes and keep up with new exploits. And there's some things that you can do, but at the same time, statistically, someone is going to find a hole and a bug, and you hope that that person is on the right side.
Well, in fact, recently Chase Bank got hacked, and it brought to my mind, you know, all these banks that supposedly have been hacked, but they didn't want their people who bank with them to know, and consequently, they did not put it out as a story, or the news didn't get until later somebody ferreted it out, which is so often the case in this business of finding news. And the
right.
fact is, you know, one who feels confidence in, let's say, their business and the model they have and all the ways of keeping people from going after their data really should be seriously concerned because of the ways that, the predators, as you call them, and the people who are out there want to get in, including even, say, Department of Defense or some of the, you know, should we say more lofty institutions that represent our government and our government security. They are hackable.
Things are hackable, yes. And the thing with Chase Bank is Chase Bank has one of the best security teams. They have thousands and thousands of people working their security. But it was just one bug in, through a website. And that's how the hackers were able to get in. So again, you know, it's finding this one bug. You know, with Target, you know, they also have a great security team. And they had a malware detection system. And so what this is a system that's going to detect if there's known malware in your system. But the problem is there's also malware systems that don't look for a signature of malware. They look for anomalous activity. So programs entering your system that act and feel as if they shouldn't. And those are the ones that tend to alert on what's called zero-day exploits. And these are exploits that don't have a signature yet because no one's done them yet. So there were indications with Target that their programs were alerting them that there were issues. But maybe they just didn't have a chain of command in place. Maybe they didn't have an incident response policy. And things just got out of hand. And one of the other mistakes, you know, based on what I've read that they did, is there was a contractor, an HVAC contractor, and it was his credentials and access controls that were used. So when I give presentations to companies, you know, one of the things that I recommend is, you know, only give people the access that they need. They don't need administrator access if they're just an HVAC contractor. Give them what they need, and when they're no longer doing their job, remove their access.
We're talking, if you've just shown us, with Tyler Cohen Wood. Her book is called Catching the Catfishers, and it's all about, well, getting smart about social media, getting smart about how you use the world of cyber communications or protection in terms of your own private cyber information. Let's talk about digital dangers. And I mean, you go into things that are really of concern to people on a daily basis,
yes.
Such as well, sexual predators are out there, online dating, cyber bullies. I mean, there's a whole range of things that you take up here. But let's talk first about how parents can protect their children and in what ways they can ensure their children. I mean, I know there's software, but, you know, if somebody connects with a kid and, say, a young girl and he is a lot older and presents
right.
himself as being a contemporary of hers,
mm-hmm.
I mean, this kind of stuff is going on not all that infrequently.
It happens a lot. And, you know, my last position, most of my training before I moved to the Defense Intelligence Agency, was doing forensic examinations on intrusion cases, but major crimes cases, too. So I was doing the analysis on children or people who had been victimized by these predators. And it's sickening. And you may think, well, this could never happen to my child, but it does. It crosses race, economic roles. Like it could happen at any time, especially with new tools coming out. Because a lot of the newer tools, you know, they don't necessarily have the same privacy settings. You can talk to anyone on who's on that network.
As you say, always monitor your privacy settings.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. Yeah. Always monitor the privacy settings. But also, one of the things that I try to do in the book is I teach parents and I teach kids. I give them a Catching the Catfishers checklist. And you can go through this checklist and you can use it to actually vet if who you're talking to online is actually who they claim to be. And I've actually used this checklist and it works, because there's going to be indications if someone is creating a fake identity. There's going to be some giveaways, and there's going to be some things that they're just not going to be able to do.
Like ask them to do a video chat.
Ask them to do a video chat. That's one example.
Or ask them, to do other kinds of things that would perhaps give away their real
Absolutely.
Identity.
Yeah, you know, send me a real-time photo. Send me a photo of what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Well, they may not be able to do that because maybe they're stealing photos from someone else's website. And if you only do get one photo, you know, I also recommend do a Google image photo search. It's very easy to do to see if that photograph has popped up anywhere else, because you'll very easily be able to determine the real social media page that photograph was taken from versus the fake one.
You're right about some guy in Toronto who claimed he owned a condo and all they had to do was look up the owner of this condo because all those records are public.
All those records are public.
But some people just don't have that kind of necessary street smarts or aren't suspicious. They're naive. They're lonely. I mean, especially young kids. And they get taken in. They get catfished.
Well, they want to trust. They want to believe that, you know, these people really are who they say they are. And, you know, that's one problem. If you're dating someone, you feel yourself falling in love with someone online, you could go through my checklist 8,000 times. You could have your friends go through the checklist 8,000 times. But if you don't want to believe it and you want to believe that this is true and this person is really who they say they are, you are going to believe it.
There are, you know, a lot of, misfits out there. It's hard to know their motives in terms of, catfishing after women or after kids. But a lot of this is just predatory behavior. And when we talk about a checklist, that's good to have. But what's the best way really to snag them or expose them or just, prevent them?
It's very important to take something like this checklist, take something like this book, and have your teenager read it. Read it with them. Have a discussion with them. And then with younger children, you know, have the same conversation that you would have with a young child about, you know, not everyone is who they seem. Never get into a car with strangers. Don't take candy from a stranger. We need to be having these conversations with our children. And we need to be open about it. And I think one of the issues is that parents feel as if they don't know the technology, they don't understand it, their kids are so much more advanced than they are. But the truth is the parents don't really have to know the technology. They just have to sort of understand the basic concepts and have the conversations with their child. You know, what tools are you using? Let me see those tools. You know, let's look at the permission settings together. You know, I want to use the tool too. And just have an open dialogue with them.
Talking with social media and cyber issue expert, author Tyler Cohen Wood here with us in studio. We'll give you an opportunity to ask questions and bring in your own experiences in fairly short order here. Something came up recently. We had Dan Levitin on, and we're talking about, he's a neuroscientist, but we were talking about how parents can determine or teach their children how to determine what is a valid, useful website as opposed to all the websites out there that are not valuable, useless. Particularly in terms of information, a lot of kids are just lazy. They'll go to the first website and they'll get all kinds of misinformation or bogus information.
Absolutely. And I mean, I hate to admit it, but sometimes I find myself doing the same thing. It's very difficult to determine, you know, what is real and what is legitimate because we have information, you know, we have information coming at us from all ends and it's just constantly coming. So, you know, you have some sites that will retract something if they say something that's not true. But you're right. You read a lot of things that are fake. And, you know, you have to find sites that you can feel comfortable with, sites that you rely on, and really look at what you're reading. And I also teach techniques in the book on how to read deception in the online domain. So how to read if someone is using the written word and they're not entirely telling the truth. And you can use some of those techniques, but a lot of it's also common sense. You know, I talk about online reviews and, you know, this is a huge issue. So there's companies that there was a big sting operation in New York where the attorney general set up a fake yogurt shop and tried to get people to write fake reviews to up the ratings on their yogurt shop. And they hired all these people to do this. And it turned out this is really common practice that people will hire people in, you know, Bangladesh or wherever. And, you know, for $5, they'll write a good review about an organization. And, you know, if it's a restaurant, okay, fine. You go to the restaurant, it looked like there were good reviews, and the restaurant sucks. So it's not the end of the world. But if it's a teeth cleaning service or some medical procedure or a charter bus that you're putting your children's lives in, you really want to be careful and you want to do your homework. And I do go through things that you can look for in the book on how to determine if a review is fake because there's going to be some giveaways.
Tell us about some of those giveaways.
So some of those are going to be, and some people, some people are not very detail-oriented people. But if you read a review and the person says, yeah, I went to do this teeth whitening service. My teeth were so sensitive. Judy was so nice and she helped me and did this. Or, you know, I was doing this bus charter service and, you know, John, the driver, there was traffic, so he took me this other way. Those are legitimate reviews because there is so much detail toward the service.
So look to the details.
Look at the detail.
Yeah.
But if someone is constantly, every review that they write is 5 stars, and they say, great service, everyone has to use this service, and is really kind of pushing for the service, but has no detail, that's something to look for, because that could be a giveaway that maybe it's not true. And you can also look at things like the person's review history. So if you have someone who's reviewing a restaurant in San Francisco one day and saying, this restaurant's great, you have to go there, but never talking about the food or anything like that, and the next day they're reviewing a restaurant in New York City, well, that's just kind of geographically. I mean, I guess you could fly across the country in a day, but if they're constantly doing things like that, that's a potential
issue. Some of these things are pretty hard to detect. I mean, geography notwithstanding, you've got people who, as you say, write reviews for money, good reviews. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably with books as well.
Yes.
You've got people who, you know, don't like a restaurant for whatever reason. Or we did a show about Yelp, for example, and we heard these stories about people who go into a restaurant and say, I would like a free dessert, or I'll get all my friends to write bad reviews. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorting through those becomes maddening sometimes, just in terms
maddening.
Of what's valid and what's not valid.
Well, and some of the other things you can do are, if a person is going to be bashing a site, a restaurant or something like that, typically they're going to use one site like Yelp. So you may see a big discrepancy if you look at the same restaurant on, say, City Search or something else. You know, it may be 5 stars with legitimate reviews. But you also really want to look at the reviewer's history and, you know, see if this reviewer seems to be legitimate. And one of the things that Yelp and the other services have started doing, which I think is pretty cool, it's a little scary, and we can go into that later, but they connect to your social media profiles and they see who your friends are and who your friends of friends are, and they'll show you reviews that friends or friends of friends have actually written. And the thought is that you can probably trust someone that you know's reviews.
Taking up a lot of issues here with cyber expert and social media expert Tyler Cohen Wood, and we're going to get you involved in this discussion. I mean, particularly in terms of finding out perhaps what's behind the facade or what may be valid and invalid and making the difference. Also questions of privacy and, you know, how do you find out information particularly that is authentic about somebody if you're into cyber dating or if and how do you guard against children, you know, finding things on the web that are frankly dangerous, or finding people that they want to meet that can lead to all kinds of peril in their lives. Anyway, these are really serious questions, important mm-hmm. questions, very much a part of the fabric of our lives. And the book is Catching the Catfishers. And you can join us. We, in fact, welcome your involvement. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to join the program with any questions or comments. 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Our guest this hour is Tyler Cohen Wood. Her book is called Catching the Catfishers, Disarm the Online Pretenders, Predators, and Perpetrators Who Are Out to Ruin Your Life. And I want to talk about what ruining life can mean. I'm looking at a Twitter comment here, though. Did Krasny really just blame the victims for their nude photos being hacked? No. All I said was it might be provident, or let's say, If you're a Hollywood star, let's say, maybe putting out nude photos might be reconsidered, or there might be some sending them privately or whatever the case may be. Anybody can do whatever they want with their own body and showing it. I didn't mean to sound like I was being censorious, but let's talk about what that reveals to us with you, Tyler. I mean, and what can be done, for example, to protect those photos that might have been sent to, okay, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, significant other, et cetera.
So my goal in writing this book and giving this information in a way that people can understand and use is so that people can make educated decisions on what they want to do and how they can protect themselves. And there are a few things that you can do. So again, you know, you can turn off that EXIF data if you don't want the geographic location information if someone hacks those photos. Another thing you can do is if you're storing
EXIF stands for exchangeable image file format.
Yes.
Just for the record. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. Go ahead.
And another thing you can do is you can apply encryption to your photographs. There's encryption programs that will encrypt the photographs. So that way, you know, if someone does actually get access to those photographs, unless they have those encryption keys, and you have a pretty strong password, it's going to be kind of gobbledygook for them. It's going to be hard for them to do. One of the other things that I suggest too is, you know, if you're using an unsecured wireless network, you know, make sure you are using encryption in the programs that you're using, you know, when you send stuff up into storage or you're using social media, are using encryption. Make sure you see if it's a URL that S the entire way, HTTPS, that S stands for secure, because otherwise people can see what you're doing.
Well, look, I wasn't, heaven forfend, moralizing or anything, but when you say that you want to conduct yourself in the world of the cyberspace the way you would outside of it,
yes,
then that does bring up a kind of question about, if I don't want my nude photographs to be hacked, then maybe should I put out nude photographs? I mean, there are ways to protect myself from doing that, obviously, but this is completely a part of any moral.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think that is a decision that people are free to make. But, you know, what I want to do is I want to give you the tools and the options so that you can understand what the risks are to doing that. Great. And if, you know, the risks are, you know, if you're a high profile celebrity, you may be targeted more than just an average Joe. But again, there are things that you can do to protect yourself.
I may just be misspeaking myself saying put them out. They're in storage, really. That's the fact,
right,
isn't it?
Right, yeah, they're okay. In storage.
But they can be put out once, right, you know, somebody accesses them, obviously. All right, here's a website comment. What many people fail to understand is that trusting an external entity with their data does not equate security. Cloud storage is a conscious trade-off of less security for convenience.
That goes beyond cloud storage. That goes with any application that you use. You know, you are trusting very sensitive information, whether it's business sensitive information or your personal information, with these services. And one of the things I highly recommend is actually read the 10 pages in the terms of services, because a lot of the sites that you use, they actually say, you know, that they have a non-transferable potential license to the content that you post. So there's a lot of things that you want to look at. You also, any application that you use, understand there's a trade-off. They're giving you this access. They're connecting you and giving you this tool. But they're getting something in return, too. And a lot of it is data collection. And it's big money for them. But a lot of the applications, not all, but most of the legitimate applications, if you go to the permission settings on your phone, will tell you exactly what permissions those applications have. And I think some people would be downright freaked out if they looked at some of the popular applications that they use and they saw what permissions they have into their phone.
You talk about in the subtitle, ruining your life.
Yes.
I mean, you know, what is it exactly? I mean, particularly from your experience doing the work that you've done, that we're talking about predators, I mean, all of those aside, but just from daily life that could actually potentially ruin your life.
Well, there's obviously the things that, you know, people say and that get them in trouble at work, you know, like the teacher that we were talking about earlier. That's something that you have control over. But then there's also, you know, things that people can post about you, or you want to, you know, maintain this reputation. And sometimes there's bad people who can try to in a bullying sense. And it isn't just kids that are bullying. I mean, I have noticed this trend that kind of scares me, because on one hand, we're teaching our children not to bully other kids, and it's a big hot issue. But then on the other end, these are things that we as mature adults find ourselves doing. We, if you go to a restaurant, I think you had mentioned this earlier, a lot of people will say, if you don't give me a free drink, I'm going to destroy your restaurant. And, they'll get all their friends to post bad social media things about it and give it terrible reviews when they've never even been to that restaurant. And it's this entitled vigilante sort of mentality, and everyone kind of jumps on the bandwagon. And
the bullying that you're talking about, notwithstanding the fact that sometimes these are the same parents who will say, don't bully to the kids.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go to our callers, and let's welcome a caller. Judith, you're on. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering what is going on with companies that keep giving away, where some individual in the company gives away huge amounts of data to supposedly some authentic company when it's a person faking being an authentic company, such as when Target said they were providing security through Experian, and then Experian provided huge amount of data to some fake company. And then it just happened again, which is just on the news, that another company just did this, and they have video and audio of the man sitting there in his office doing it.
Tyler Cohen Wood.
Well, again, the more that we rely on these services to protect our data, and then when you throw in, like you just said, these second and third party services, it gets exponentially more frightening, and more people have your data. And again, I do think that the companies should do their due diligence to make sure that the companies they're giving data to are legit companies, and that they have practical ways or at least plans for securing your customer data. Because one of the things that infuriates me the most is that as a citizen, as a person, if your identity is hacked, you really don't have a lot of rights. That is something that can very easily ruin your life. And if you don't have one of those credit monitoring services that will alert you right away, I mean, I've seen people's lives completely destroyed because their identities were stolen. And I do think that companies need to be a lot more cognizant about who they're giving this data to and who they're selling this data to.
Let me thank you, Judith, for your call, and go right to another caller, and that's you, Teresa. You're on. Good morning.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple questions for your guest. First of all, I have taught middle school for almost a decade now, and I am extremely concerned about how naive students are, but also the parents.
Yes.
And so I would like to get your opinion on where should this safety education come from. As a technology teacher, as a middle school teacher, I feel that I have some, opportunities to teach, but this is also a very sensitive topic with parents. And that kind of goes into my second question about when should children or preteens or whoever get a social media account. And, as a teacher, I can't really step into that arena and discuss those things, but it needs to be discussed, and it's not being discussed.
It does. Because, one of the biggest issues is that kids, they don't quite understand that things that they may be posting, like, you remember that Nick-nominate game that went around where people were doing the massive drinking and posting it online? Well, these things follow you forever. And they're going to affect your future job prospects. It's going to affect you maybe even getting into college. It doesn't go away. And I really do think that there's got to be some way between teaching the students. I think it's the parents' responsibility, but I would like to see the schools actually have more involvement and have the ability to get more involved in this. And I would actually like to see a curriculum taught in schools that teaches social media life skills to children at a very young age, because, you know, whether you like it or not, this internet thing isn't going away, and it's something we use in our daily lives. And children learn math skills, they learn reading skills, but this is such a huge part of our lives. We use it in our work, we use it in our daily lives. They have to understand how to use it and what the risks are. And I think a nice common curriculum has to be taught in schools too, with parents helping to enforce these skills.
Well, here's a listener apropos of this who writes, evaluating online information and being safe on the web are prime examples of topics that school librarians teach. Next time your kid's school proposes cutting their librarian, consider everything you heard on today's program. It's a pitch for keeping librarians. Another listener writes, these big companies are making money hand over fist on the internet, and our privacy is not only not important but also tradable as a commodity. As for personal information, the idea that any of our information is not already in the hands of hackers somewhere is laughable. Just add the numbers for Target hack, Home Depot hack, Chase hack, and others. Privacy is dead. And we have another listener who emails us. This is Frank. People, especially teenagers who spent their lives on social media, the major time-wasting epidemic of our age, are just setting themselves up to be hacked, humiliated, bullied, etc. One surefire solution, sign off and get a life. And here's another listener who says, does the author know what happened to my old favorite encryption program, TrueCrypt, that was pulled from its website after many years?
Oh, no idea, but that is a huge mystery. If that listener actually knows something, I would personally like to know. That was it.
What was it, TrueCrypt?
TrueCrypt is a really cool program. And what it did was it was encryption inside of encryption. So you could, a freely available tool, you know, you could have something that was encrypted in like a storage space inside of encryption. So if you put one password in, you could show the fake stuff. But then you put the other password in, and that's where all your, like, good stuff is. And all of a sudden, it just kind of disappeared. They posted on their site some really weird things, not to use it anymore, and no one seems to know what happened.
Can you maybe give us some tips or some useful information about keeping track of passwords and other tips related to passwords?
So there are some password programs that you can use that you just have to know one big passphrase and it will keep all of your passwords. Some of them work really well. That's a good way to do it. You know, I say that though, but I don't do that. I mean, one of the things that I do is I try very hard to change my passwords, you know, every couple of months. I try very hard not to, use the same passwords or just add a digit. None of my passwords are things that could easily, you know, they have nothing really to do with my life. But, you know, it's hard because then I forget my passwords. So one of the things that I actually hope happens and comes to the United States is a lot of the credit cards in Europe, they use these two-factor authentication, where you have a chip and you have a PIN. And I really want that to come to the United States because that will solve a lot of our issues.
Talking again with Tyler Cohen-Wood. Her new book is Catching the Catfishers, Disarm the Online Pretenders, Predators, and Perpetrators Who Are Out to Ruin Your Life. Let me go to another caller here. And Mary joins us. Mary, hi.
Hi. How are you doing? This is a great conversation. I have a really difficult time with a guy that I used to work with who is now an NT administrator, and he was bragging to me that he stuck a beacon on my name, and I used to work in IT. I don't work anymore. He's managed to bully me completely off the internet. He's hacked and consumed several address books, so I'm afraid of getting in touch with any of my friends because he'll triangulate if my name goes on an email even. At this point. So I don't know how to get through to do an IC3 report to the FBI, because with the beacon always on my name, if I even write my name in the internet, he hacks it and blows it off.
And you've contacted your local authorities, the local police. I'm not sure what
the local
city.
Police. I'm in San Francisco. The local police don't do anything about cybercrime.
Yeah, and that's
they're
really
way behind the eight ball in terms of
really,
the learning
really
curve.
Way
yeah.
Behind.
Any suggestions for her, Tyler?
Can we get her contact information, and I'll think about that and see if there's someone I can actually put her in touch with.
Judy, can you do that? Yeah, we hope we can help you on that score, Mary. Thank you.
Yeah, because that's terrible.
I've seen a lot of terrible things in your work, haven't you?
I have, and I mean, one of the things that I really want to do, you know, do I have a couple minutes to tell a quick story?
Sure.
So, the reason I wrote this book is because of the terrible things that I saw, and I started looking at a lot of different books similar to this, and they were just very, very technically written. They were not easy for an average person who has not spent their lives learning this technology to understand. So I wrote this book in an attempt to teach technical things, but just what you need to know as a parent, as
to lay people,
right, to the lay people in a way that they can understand and they can actually immediately start applying these techniques and they can protect themselves and their families so that I never have to see another child or another person victimized, because people don't realize some of the things that they might be doing that are putting their family or their you know, even their business at risk. And I couldn't find anything that would do that in a really, really easy to read, really easy to understand way.
So that's why you wrote it.
And that's why I wrote it. And I mean, if I had the money, I would get this book in every school.
Let's get another caller on in the meantime, and we'll go to San Francisco again. Nico, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. There's so much stuff I'd love to comment or ask about, but I'll try and keep it to one thing that concerns me, because I don't think a lot of people talk about it. But Google, I see, is one of the biggest kind of scariest areas right now with privacy, and actually it spreads into a lot of areas, but mostly in privacy and how our data and our private information can be used and abused. I say that in particular because, am I still on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. It was so quiet. I have some particular concerns, especially since they've started to branch out into much larger areas like the Internet of Things, medical mm-hmm. equipment, yeah. Self-driving cars. I mean, they've sort of the idea that I don't want to say the story, I mean, it could be largely true or true, is that this is just to generate advertising revenue through targeted advertising. You know, I'm concerned about it, just even if that's, you know, completely true. I'm concerned because whenever you have such a huge collection of data in one place, obviously that if they ever get hacked or whatever, then they can get virtually anything about you. But also because there's a lot of things that just concern me that one place has access to all that. And so anyways, that's just an area of concern. I kind of thought of it when you mentioned doing a Google image search, you know, and I thought of, oh, well, now Google will forever link you with that person that you just searched, you know, what they do with that, who knows.
But, well, your concern, yeah. Nico, is the concern of many, like I said.
Yeah, it's definitely a concern of many. I mean, one of the positives that Google does, Facebook as well, most of the major social media sites that we use, and I'm not saying this is an excuse at all, but they do actually tell you that they're doing this. But I do agree it's a little off-putting. I mean, I had an incident actually coming here today where I live in Washington, D.C., and I don't really know the San Francisco area very well. I had Googled through Gmail, my husband, the information for the studio, and we had text messaged about it. And he is an Android, and I have an Android, too, sometimes that I use. And the next thing I know, his Google card pops up, and it says, Tyler has an interview at this location, there's traffic, so you need to leave by this time to get there, by the time you're supposed to get there.
Well, actually, here's Ben who writes, I have location services, the GPS tracking disabled on my iPhone 4S, but
yes.
I just spotted that I can still pull up all the locations of my photographs in iPhoto via the Places tab in iPhoto. I also have lookup places set to never in iPhoto, yet it's putting pins into a map of all my photos regardless. It looks to me like fully disabling the tracking of photos is a lot harder than just setting location services off the phone.
It is. Oh, has he gone to the privacy settings?
Don't know. He just sent in an email. I can't ask him that. But quick question. We've been talking about Facebook and a number of other social media. Summer on our Facebook page says, how secure is LinkedIn? I've been reluctant to post my resume on this site. By secure, the whole world can see your work history. Your enemies can and have caused me harm. Please address, says it's a double-edged sword. If you're not revealing your background, companies and managers are suspicious.
And that's entirely true. I mean, I hate to say it, but companies now, I think the last statistic I read is 95% of companies, if you do not have a social media presence and you do not show that you know how to use these tools, they'll overlook you. So there are, I believe, some privacy settings on LinkedIn. It's not as much so with, Facebook or some of the others. But you just, again, have to weigh the risks of having this LinkedIn profile versus, not having it and not being able to be found.
You're listening to Forum, and we're talking to Tyler Cohen Wood. Her book is called Catching the Catfishers. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. So for more information about how to support KQED Radio, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And let's go to another of your calls, and we'll go next to you. Kevin, good morning. You're on.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. Good, how are you?
Not bad. I just wanted to say that commenting about something that you guys were talking about earlier, and that was the celebrity leaks, I just kind of wanted to say, I grew up with computers, with tech, on a 9600 baud modem on bulletin board services back in the 90s.
Oh, nice.
And I learned, when I was at a very young age that, you don't put anything on the internet because it never goes away.
No.
Ever. And people need to act as if they have no privacy on the internet. I mean, I'm not saying that companies, can't still try and protect your information. But one of the points that I wanted to bring up about that is people at first thought, oh, this is a big iCloud breach. This is this breach, that breach. But it wasn't one big breach. This has been happening for years. And it was just one guy who decided to say, hey, I'm going to release all this stuff right now. This wasn't some big security concern that happened all at one time last week.
Right.
It's been happening over years, and there's really no way that you can protect yourself from that
right.
unless you act as if it's going to happen.
Well, and I am one of those people. I will never, ever, ever blame the victim. And I am by no means saying that they shouldn't have done this. They shouldn't have posted those pictures. But you are right that you do have to have a mind shift in terms of privacy. And you do have to kind of understand it's sort of like if I were to walk into a room and I were to give a bunch of pictures of myself in compromising positions saying, don't give this to anybody else. Well, I don't have any control over that. So it's really kind of, it's a double-edged sword. You want to be able to do what you want to do using this incredible medium. But at the same time, too, you have to try to figure out, you have to balance the risks and view privacy in that way. That you described.
Let me thank you, Kevin, for the call. Actually, I want to go to a website comment from a listener named Ruth. It's another view of things. She writes, regarding the earlier comment about online behavior and being circumspect about what you say and share, I think people may be removing their masks and revealing a truer picture of themselves than societal norms allow. There's a certain freedom presented by the internet not available in daily humdrum life. Well, the darker side of that is, you begin your book talking about somebody who was a coworker of yours, and he was very nice and easy to work with, and suddenly you'd see all this behavior online that made him seem like a very different person.
Your caller is 100% right. You can learn, I truly believe this, you can learn more about a person by spending an hour doing a little bit of reconnaissance on them online than you can actually sitting and knowing that person for hours. And like the guy I talk about in my book, I knew this guy for years. We were such close friends. And people would constantly say to me, you know, this guy's got this, he's an egomaniac, he's a bully, he's a jerk. You know, how do you not see this? 2 weeks being his social media friend, he was bullying people left and right. He was arguing about the weather. And I saw this side to him that I had never seen before. And I was completely shocked. But I realized, you know, this is really who this person is.
Another comment from a listener who says, privacy is not dead. I've been hearing for years that it is. The enemies of privacy want you to think it is. Their message has gone viral, a lentivirus, as it were. And you always hear it when you object to violations of your privacy. Call them on it. Snowden put a small crimp into their campaign. It's safe to call them on it now. Let me get another caller on here, and that's Mordechai. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is this. In conversation with a T-Mobile representative, I learned some very interesting things. One is that when you allow an app to access your cell phone, they have complete access to the forward and rear-facing camera lenses. They can also activate any sound apps that you have so that you can be listened in on. Something else which is not really on target, but I learned that the operating systems that are downloaded automatically without your choice become a burden to older hardware. And it's not true that cell phones get old and weary and tired. What happens is that the overhead they have to run makes them unusable, and some certain manufacturers are very aware of this, right? Because it's planned obsolescence. They know that you're going to have to buy a new phone.
Good point. And a point well worth taking, and we're going to have to leave it there because we've come to the end of the hour. Tyler Cohen Wood's book, again, is called Catching the Catfishers. Good to have you on. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Forum is with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. Our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer, Danny Bringer. We get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our interns are Leslie Chang, Kathy Shield, Hannah Kingsley Ma, Charlie Zaharoff, Eric Nygaard, Kaylin Dakin. And for all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.